Okay, so yesterday we went a little further into the concept of maror and the question of, is it a mitzvah of achila nowadays? Was it historically a mitzvah of achila on a level of Minhag Torah? And why would it be different if it is different? And we discussed one possible approach to how that would suit the Zeicher LeMikdash focus. Just to say a little bit more about that and the consequences of there being a Kedayah standard. So there is a discussion in the Achronim that if we assume that at least nowadays the mitzvah derabanan that we have of eating maror, that that requires a Kedayah. So what happens if you don't have a Kedayah? So is there any value in eating that? And the truth is you could ask that question in two different ways, depending on what your orientation is, because there are some who ask that they want to at least have a mitzvah to whatever extent possible. So if they only have less than a kezayis of maror, or for reasons of health, being that maror could be a challenging experience, just not able to eat a lot of maror, so can they at least do something? Can they accomplish something by having a little bit? And there are some who ask the question from the opposite direction, that being that they are so averse to maror, so they would rather take the position that if they can't have the kezayis, they should be off the hook completely. But maybe we should say to them that if you can't have a kezayis, you should still have as much as you can have, because if there is some value to having any amount, so then maybe conversely that becomes an obligation. So you could ask the question from either direction. I at least get a shtickle of mitzvah, or do I have to have any? Could I rather be off the hook? So you find the question asked from both directions. There are many tshuvas about maror in the tshuvas of Mordechai Friedberg. It's called the tshuvas Divrei Mordechai. And he talks about this mostly from the perspective of the issue that we mentioned last week in the context of matzah, the question of chatzi shir by mitzvos. We know there's the whole sugya, very relevant to Pesach, of the question of chatzi shir by prohibitions, and the fact that even though you need to eat a kezayis, usually that's the shir, in order to be punishable, but there's still a prohibition to have any little amount. So does that flip to mitzvos? We spoke about that a little bit because the question came up in the context of matzah. Chatzi shir happens to be one of those kol Torah kula sugyas, but Pesach has it to a extreme degree because chametz is a major issue for chatzi shir, and both the issue of eating chametz and the question of bal yirah bal yimatzeh we spoke about a little bit in the first parak. And in terms of this issue of mitzvos, is there a value to a less than a shir of a mitzvah? So it's relevant to matzah, and it's relevant to maror, and it's relevant to different aspects. So the question of chatzi shir overall comes up in at least four different ways in the context of Pesach, if not more. So this is one of the issues. So what about when it comes to maror? So the Divrei Mordechai is a long tshuva where he goes through really a great length all of the different angles of chatzi shir in positive mitzvos, and he ends off assuming that there is a value to it, and therefore there is an obligation. That's the position he was coming from. Do we obligate somebody to have a little bit of maror if at least that much he could be able to tolerate? And he assumes that yes, although he says that there wouldn't be a bracha on that because it's still a matter of dispute. There's still room to question whether there's any mitzvah value in that. There's enough basis to think there is, that you should pursue it, but also enough basis to be unsure and therefore not to make the bracha. And he says it certainly would come out to less than a typical mitzvah derabanan, where at least there's a clear obligation on that level. The Avni Nezer, however, in the same tshuva that we referenced when talking about matzah, if you recall, Tav Pei Gimel, so we talked about that tshuva where he discusses it in reference to that. So most of the tshuva is about maror. And he also assumes that there is a value to having less than a kezayis of maror. both because of the question of Chatzi Shir by Mitzvos, which he much more briefly references than the Divrei Mordechai does, but also because of a fundamental role here, that when it comes to the Mitzvah of Maror, similar to what we said yesterday, so he does assume that Midrabanan, Chazal created a mitzvah of a kezias, a mitzvah of achila that requires a kezias. And that wasn't necessarily the case in the context of the Din Min HaTorah. But Midrabanan, yes, and you know it's the contrast, the karpas, if you recall. A while ago we were talking about karpas, and there the Rambam had the minority view that karpas requires a kezias, and we actually, halacha, do the opposite. We make sure not to have a kezias. So he notes there that, okay, karpas, the other Rishonim, like the Rush, who's the focus when we talk about Mur, don't require a kezias for karpas, because that's a zecher. That's just, but that's there to, excuse me, to make the children ask. That's the hecker, to make the children ask. So that, there's no need for a bracha, but, and no need for a kezias. But it's not a mitzvah of achila that would require a kezias. But Maror, that Chazal instituted as a din d'rabbanan of achila, so that would require a kezias. But it leaves us the question of why. Why would they change from what was the case in HaTorah? So we gave one approach to that question yesterday, and he seems to be addressing it in a little bit different way, where he notes that even Bisman HaBayis, when there was a Korban Pesach, if somebody doesn't have a involvement in the Korban Pesach, let's say because they are Tamei or Bedar Chuchoka, so then they're still obligated in Matzah and Mar on a level of Manatoru. So then, presumably, they have a mitzvah of eating the Kezias Mar by itself. So it sounds like he's saying that Chazal were mitaking that to pattern that achila. And there is still a distinction between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni on that front, because Pesach Sheni, Korban Pesach was the only mitzvah, and Matzah Maror is there only in that context. While, and only in the context of actually bringing it. While in the context of Pesach Rishon, even without the Pesach being brought, there would be a mitzvah to eat matzah and to eat mar. So in the context of the Korban Pesach, and that's why he suggests why the Gemara specifically brings the pasuk from Pesach Sheni to make this point, that there the mar is even less than a kezias, because it's only as it's togetherness with the Korban Pesach. So what emerges from that is that even though ideally we have to have a kezias of Maror Bizman HaZeh because that's the takana, but if you don't have it, so then there's still a value to having less than a kezias, not only because of the general Chatzi Shir by Mitzvah's question, but because it's still a zecher to what was happening. They would have even less than a kezias of Maror in the context of Korban Pesach. So therefore, it still fulfills that role of being evocative of what Korban Pesach was, what the Korban Pesach experience was. So for that reason, it says it's kedai to have even less than a kezias of Maror. But he addresses the question of the bracha differently than the Divrei Mordechai. Divrei Mordechai said not to make a bracha. The Avnezer says you should make a bracha on less than a kezias, but we should change the nusach, like you sometimes find, that if the mitzvah is taking a different form, then sometimes the bracha has to reflect that. So he says instead of al achilas maror, which was the Rush's whole point, that that would reflect the kezias, so here you would have to change it to al mitzvah smar. And that was his recommendation. Okay, so far so good. Everybody with me? How are you guys doing on the Zoom there? Okay, so that's as far as the eating of less than a whole portion of mar. the Divrei Mordechai in another tshuva. He has a whole series of tshuvas about this in his sefer. It's available on HebrewBooks.org if you want to look it up. There are many Divrei Mordechais. This is the Friedberg Divrei Mordechai. So it's around the Memches, Memtes, Nun, Nun Aleph. He has a whole series of tshuvas, about four or five tshuvas about Marer and related issues. So he also discusses another partial fulfillment, or a possible partial fulfillment. And he says, what about the following? So what about somebody who it's hard for him to eat Marer, and he can't even have any quantity at all if he's going to swallow it? But maybe we should say that, so let him taste a little Marer and then spit it out. So at least he'll have the merirus, at least he'll have the bitterness. And that will be something. And he quotes the Chok Yaakov, who recommends that. Then he discusses another kind of partial idea. What if you simply don't have actual Marer? Either because you don't have it, or because what qualifies is something that you can't tolerate. So then, what if you could take a different vegetable that has some bitterness in it, but doesn't make the list? Should you have that as kind of a zecher of a zecher? Marer itself is a zecher, so this is to keep the idea of marer alive, even if it's not the actual fulfillment. So he quotes another Gaon who says that doesn't identify who, but he quotes that as the view of another Gadol. And his objection to both of those practices, to the practice of having a different vegetable and the practice of eating it and spitting it out, but first more about the idea of having a different vegetable, is that the Gemara in Sukkah discusses that in the context of Lulav and Esrog. The Gemara says that if somebody happens not to have access to any Esrogim, so then he might think, okay, I'll take an apple, I'll take an orange, I'll take some other fruit, just so I have something esrog-like happening. And the Gemara says it's a bad idea, that maybe zimnin nafik mei churva, that people will think, oh yeah, that's acceptable, and next year they'll do that b'chachila. So in some ways it's better just to acknowledge that you don't have the possibility and to live without, so that you don't create a kilkul, so that you don't confuse as to what's going on. So we've mentioned in the past that there is some kind of a tension here a little bit, as far as when we go in one direction, when we go in the other direction, and it takes really a sense of evaluation as to just how misleading could it be. Will this be something that people will perceive as a potential norm, or will it be understood that this is something that's a stand-in for the real mitzvah until we can get from one step to the other? It's a little bit of an issue with the Zeichel HaMikdash, which we discussed yesterday, and it's an issue on an individual level when you have these circumstances that are compromised. So when do we say, okay, better a little bit than nothing, and when do we say, no, a little is worse than nothing, because that could create a misimpression? And of course, this is something that Klal Yisrael has been dealing with this past year, because of the pandemic urgencies. When we're not able to, came up, for example, in terms of when it was total lockdown, and which in terms of going over the parsha and the like, and the various questions of, you know, when do we try to maintain whatever aspect of the structure as we can, even if it's not really going to make the cut, and when do we worry that maybe this will become the new normal, and that will sound like it's something that is acceptable even when there are other options. So this is somewhat of a judgment call, and he discusses both of these, and he is negative towards both of them because of the concern of creating a misimpression. But the idea of just tasting the Marer, which the Chok Yaakov had recommended, said also reflects the idea that the Merirus is its own mitzvah, and that even without consuming the Marer, perhaps one could say that there's a mitzvah just to the bitterness. So our Gemara had discussed that if you swallow matzah without chewing it, you're yotzei, but if you swallow Marer that way, you're not yotzei. So that seems to suggest that the merirus itself is a part of the mitzvah. There's other possibilities. Rav Asher Weiss and his Haggadah had a discussion about to what extent actually tasting the merirus is crucial for the mitzvah, or an enhancement to the mitzvah. So here too, that's a discussion that could come here from the other direction, that maybe to have the merirus without the maror is something of some value. So he goes, analyzes all of those angles and concludes that he thinks both having the taste without eating it and having a alternative vegetable will both create a misimpression, and he doesn't recommend either. But in terms of quantity, if you have only a little bit of real maror, but it's not enough of a kedayis, that it suggests is not only valuable but obligatory because of its value, and that's the path he recommends. And the Avnei Nezer, a similar recommendation with an additional logic to it, that essentially is a zecher of what was taking place in the context of the Karn Pesach, and the Avnei Nezer even recommending a bracha, and that would be different as well in that perspective. Okay, so far so good. Everybody with me? Good. All right. So, with that, how do we understand, when considering what maror is and the question of whether it requires a kezias fundamentally, whether it requires a kezias by itself, all of that then plays a role in understanding korech. And korech is bound up, no pun intended, in the concept that the Gemara evokes, a very mysterious concept of mitzvos mevatlos zuitzu. That apparently the Rabbanan are worried about this idea that mitzvos could cancel each other out, and their understanding of matzah semerorim is matzah by itself and maror by itself. And Hillel is not worried about that, and therefore he understands that it should all be one bundle. And our Gemara then says that, however, he does acknowledge that it could be an issue, it is an issue, if the mitzvahs are not equal, if one mitzvah is mina Torah, one mitzvah is midrabbana, and because maror bizmana zeh is drabbana, that shifts the balance, and that's why we have to have the matzah first, even according to him, even according to Hillel, and have the maror afterwards. The maror afterwards with the bundle, with the korech. And because we're being choshish to both opinions, so we also have maror in between. But even Hillel would agree, bizman hazeh, that you have to have the matzah separately, because mitzvos mevatlos is a concern when they're not on the same level. When the matzah is deraisa, and the maror is drabbanan. And if you had a chance to see that this machlokus is invoked also in the Gemara Masach HaZvachim, and a proof is brought from Hillel's position about korech, that mitzvos don't cancel each other out. So, what is going on here? What is this whole concept about? What do the words mean? Mitzvos mevatlos zuitzu. And we discussed it a little bit when we just got started with the Gemara, how we get kind of conflicting impressions about what we're talking about. But are we talking about some mitzias of bittul? Right, that there's some reality that one substance is going to impact on the other substance? And we saw that some Rishonim invoked things such as relative quantities and about significantly the more powerful taste of maror compared to matzah. So is this something that is rooted in factual reality? Or is it about the halachic issues and about the mitzvah status? So we saw indications of both. And if you look at the Rishonim here, you look at the Meiri and the Maran Chalava and the Ramban, so they go in different directions. So some of them say, like the Meiri says, that it's about the mitzvah, it's about the chibuv ha-mitzvah. The love for each mitzvah requires that we don't have them crowd each other out. And Maram Chalava quotes an opinion you find elsewhere also, that it's more about the powerful taste of Mara that we're worried about. And Tosfos and Zvachim and Tosfos and Ardaf seem to take different positions on this, because Tosfos and Zvachim focuses on the matzah being overpowered by the Mara. But Tosfos and Ardaf sounds like it's more of a halachic issue, because it mentions that it could end up going the other direction also. That if the matzah is already fulfilled, and now matzah is not a mitzvah at all, or not an obligatory mitzvah at all, that could end up canceling out the Mara Drabanan. Because just like the Mara Drabanan can cancel out the matzah if it's Minatara, if they're different. So too, if you take everything down a notch and the matzah is Drabanan and the matzah is not a mitzvah at all, because you're already Yotze, so then the matzah could knock out the Mara, according to Tosfos and Ardaf. So that sounds it's about the halachic distinction. And it's also very hard to understand if there's a bittul going on. So bittul is usually about the more powerful overwhelming the less powerful. Right? Either because of quantity, so the more negates the less, or because of maybe it's more powerful taste or something like that, or a stronger influence on the overall product. But why would it be that if we're talking from a mitzvah perspective, that we should say that the Derabbanan should knock out the Deraisa, and the Rishus should knock out the Derabbanan? Why do we always give the winner to the lesser status? Shouldn't it be the other way around? But if you're saying it's just matzah versus Mara wins because Mara is more powerful taste, then we get it. But if we're saying that the Raisa knocks out of the Rabbanan and Rishus knocks out of the Rabbanan, that's harder to understand. And one more question you could ask, and this Tosfos brings up on our daf, right? The idea that Hillel is a proof that mitzvos don't cancel out each other. You could probably ask a pretty powerful question on using that as a proof, which Tosfos on our daf asks. What's that question? Why would it seem to be a little bit of a problematic proof for mitzvos in general to look to Hillel's Korech as a proof that mitzvos don't cancel each other out? It would seem like Hillel's whole understanding is that that's the nature of the mitzvah, is that they have to be combined. So it seems pretty logical to say that that's not comparable to other mitzvahs. That's an exception. The Torah tells us that's how you're supposed to do it. So if that's how he understands it, if that's what the Torah is saying, so then it doesn't seem possible that it would be a problem of vatlazut. So maybe you can't derive from there for any other concept. So all those questions are challenging. And there's a lot that's written about this concept, and I'll just share with you over the next few minutes a few ideas that appear in different svarim, and we could maybe bring them together to have somewhat of a path here. So first, to mention, there's a very fascinating tshuva, a very, very interesting angle on this, from Rav Shlomo Eger. Rav Shlomo Eger was the son of Rav Akiva Eger, and was a great gadol in his own right, and he has a tshuva that was written to his son. And maybe tomorrow we'll fill you in a little bit about what the question was, related to the broader theme, but separate from the details of the question that Shlomo Eger's son asked him, he discusses what is this whole idea of mitzvos mevat lezuetzu, and he mentions that question that we asked before, that isn't it reverse of what it should be, that if there is a bittul from a mitzvah, so then you would think that the bigger mitzvah would be mevatel the smaller mitzvah, the deraisa would be mevatel the derabbanan. Why is it that the Rabbanan knocks out the Dereisa? Or the Rishos knocks out the Rabbanan? It doesn't seem logical. And his approach to this also is related to the other question of the kind of mixed messages that we get, whether this is about the Halacha or whether it's about the Metzius. So he has a very fascinating way of looking at this. And the gist of it is like this. Really, the question here, we have to know how to, what direction to come from. So, are we thinking that mitzvos might be mevatel each other, which is how some of the Rishonim phrased it? Or are we talking about a situation where there's already a basis for bittul? And the question is, should it still be considered bittul if we're also addressing a mitzvah situation? So, two things that maybe could have been mevatel each other. If a mitzvah is involved, maybe that takes away the bittul, is mevatel the bittul, so to speak. So let's assume that it's the second one, that the premise, the concern of bittul is not because we have two mitzvahs here. The concern for bittul is that we have two things that are at odds with each other. And the question is, should we still be worried about that if they are both mitzvahs? So let's say, in our case, we have matzah and we have maror. And maror could be a contradiction to the taste of matzah. Does it help the fact that they're both mitzvos? Does that undo the bittul possibility? You ever understand the reframing, how that could make a difference? So here, he draws upon another sugya. There is a concept in halacha that mitzvos lav lehenos nidne. Right, mitzvos are not considered to be hana for halachic purposes, which means that a minimum is follows. Let's say I take a neder not to be nene from something or someone. So I'm not allowed to benefit from their property or from them, whatever the neder is. But I want to do a mitzvah with this item. You know, let's say I take a neder against an esrog, but I want to do a mitzvah. I want to do the mitzvah of esrog with that esrog. So if we say mitzvah slav lehenos nitnu, the fact that I'm fulfilling a mitzvah does not itself constitute hana. So it would not be a violation of that neder. But some of the Rishonim go farther. This was a machlokus among the Rishonim, but some Rishonim go farther and say, what if it's not just that I'm doing a mitzvah, but there's a hana at the same time? There's a physical hana. Like, let's say a person is tovel in a cold mikveh in the summer. So maybe there's a mitzvah involved, but there's also, it's refreshing. There's also a physical hana from doing that. So is he allowed, if there's an isser hana, let's say if there's a neder hana involved there, is he allowed to do that? So okay, the mitzvah doesn't count as hana, but what about the fact that there is still physical hana? Should we be worried about that? So that was a machlokas Rishonim. So why would you say that we could extend it, the view of the Rishonim, that you could extend it to that also? Why would you say that that should be the case if there is physical hana? So shouldn't that be a violation of whatever isur hana there is? So the way he understands it is that the focus the individual has on the mitzvah, he's a very spiritual person, he's very lishma. So even though it's the same kind of action that by itself would have had a physical hana, but because he's so focused on the mitzvah, so that overwhelms whatever hana he'd be getting. The hana is not on his mind at all. So it knocks it out, so to speak, and the only focus is on the mitzvah. So the same way, mitzvahs lav lehenos nitnu, it even applies even if there is also a physical hana at the same time. Okay? So far, so good? So essentially, that's what Hillel could mean when he says mitzvos ein mevat lazu zu, that normally you maybe would have had a bittul here. Matzah and maror are two inconsistent tastes, and the taste of the maror is going to knock out the taste of the matzah. But because they're mitzvos, and that's all you're thinking about when you're pursuing the mitzvah, so that removes the issue, right? Removes the clash that would have created the bittul. So the question in that perspective was never, oh, maybe because there are two mitzvahs that should cancel each other. The issue was they're canceling each other anyway. But because they're mitzvahs, that comes and says, we can cancel the cancel. Okay, so far so good? So with that, he then goes to explain, why does it matter if they're on different levels? Why does it matter if one's a deraisa and one's a derabbanan? So to go back again to the sugya of mitzvahs lav lehenis ditnim, so again there are rishonim that say that fulfilling a mitzvah is not called a hana. And even if that mitzvah has physical hana attached to it, it's still not called a hana. But if the mitzvah is drabana, so if you do something which has a physical hana and it's a mitzvah drabana, then that does still count as hana. In other words, then the mitzvah derabanan, not the reis, the mitzvah derabanan, does not save it from being a hana reality. And presumably the idea is that, with all due respect to derabanan and Klal Yisrael, so we're not as religious about the derabanan. So when it comes to a mitzvah minat Torah, so then we're able to say, okay, we're so focused on the religious mission here that that overwhelms everything else. But the mitzvah derabanan, not as much. So maybe that's what's going on here. So when you have matzah and maror, they're both minhag Torah. So there could have been a clash in terms of the different tastes. But because they're both mitzvos minhag Torah, that's all we're thinking about, and they just exist as mitzvos. But when matzah is minhag Torah and maror is derabanan, so then matzah we're purely thinking about the mitzvah. Maror, not as much. So now the taste of maror comes back and has something to say. And that is going to cause a problem for the matzah. So we have to do the mitzvah of matzah and ha-Torah separately to not have the maror cause a problem for it. Everyone follow that? It's quite a sharp point, no pun intended. It's quite a harifus. So it's interesting to consider how that could possibly explain things. Just to combine it with another point or two that you find in other sort, everyone's coming independently here, but there is a certain compatibility. In the Tshuva's Bar Livoy, he has a longish tshuva about this. And he addresses the question of Tosfos, which really does seem to be a pretty present issue. That how could you bring any proof from Hillel that in his Korech position that mitzvah say mevat lazu zu? Clearly you could think that that's an exception. He understands that that's what the Torah is telling us to do. So that's how the mitzvah has to be. So it couldn't be that that creates a clash. But other mitzvahs to mix them maybe would be a clash. So he notes that there is a machlokas elsewhere in Shas, without getting into the details now, of how to interpret the word al, ayin lamed, in the Torah. Does al mean on top of literally? Or does it mean near, samach? Does al literally mean on top of, or does it mean just an adjacent? So it would seem that that's a pretty relevant machlokas here too, that the machlokas, Rabbanan and Hillel, about whether you should have matzah and maror one after each other or have them together, where the Torah says al matzah simroru, seems like that's really the machlokas, right? Is it, how do we understand al? Does al mean one after the other, or does it mean literally one on top of the other? So why don't we just say that's the question? Why are we bringing in mitzvah mevat lazu? It seems like that's the issue. The issue is a parshanas hamikra question. What does the word al mean? So here, he notes, as the Gemara indicates in Menachos, where there is such a discussion, that it also is affected by, is there some reason to interpret the pasuk one way or another? That it's not an abstract issue, just how do we translate al in all cases, but the context makes a difference. The context is a relevant clue to understanding how to interpret al. So, if that's the case, so we can really think about this one backwards also. Rav Shlomo Eger told us to flip our perspective on the soul issue. And here, Bar Levoy is saying, flip something else. That first, you have to understand, how do you view mitzvos mevat lezuitzu? And that's going to affect what you think is the more logical interpretation of the pasuk. If the pasuk says al, and you want to know, does al mean together or one after each other? So if you believe mitzvos mevat lezuitzu, then you can say, well, they can't all be together, it's going to be a stirah. So that it must mean al is more logically interpreted as one after the other. But if you hold that the mitzvos can coexist at the same time, that they're not going to cancel each other out, so then maybe the more literal translation makes sense, and al means it should all be one unit. So that brings us to the question of really what makes more sense here, which is something I want to explore a little bit more tomorrow, our last day of Shir before Yantiv. But I'll just add, I'll let you go in a second, that the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva, again, independently of either of these two, but it's also just compatible, where he discusses the issue that we've also been trying to figure out of why we use the pasuk from Pesach Sheni rather than the pasuk from Pesach Rishon. And there he says, it's compatible with the Avnezer said also, that there was a different practice on Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. That on Pesach night, on the 15th of Nisan, so then there's an obligation of Korban Pesach together with Matzah and Mar. But the Torah also tells us, Be'erev Tochlu Matzah, so Matzah has an independent status in itself. It's not only just Tofel to the Korban Pesach. But on Pesach Sheni, there's no independent mitzvah of Matzah, as we talked about. So therefore, the only role Matzah has is in the context of the Korban Pesach, as Tofel, as secondary to the Korban Pesach. So Gemara brings that pasuk, Hillel brings that pasuk, because the notion of mitzvah saying mevat lezu etzu is a much bigger chiddush in that case. Because it's telling us that even when a mitzvah is tofel to another mitzvah, even when it's there only in the service of the other mitzvah, it's still not batel. So you could have thought, okay, matzah isn't batel because it's got its own chashivas. But on Pesach Sheni, it doesn't have its own chashivas. It's equal to mar. And both of them are secondary to the Pesach. So if there's no bittul, that tells us more about just to what extent we're ready to say that they don't cancel each other out. So what does that tell us about the whole package together? And what does Rabbi Gamliel want to tell us? So Be'ez Hashem, we will fill that in tomorrow. So I wish you all a wonderful day, and should be only good things, and I will tell you the exact schedule, check the chat to find out. I will see you tomorrow. Okay, have a great day.